Chapter 21, Preparation. November 23rd, Mirth. Stavius snuck as close to the shield as he dared late that first night while Versera watched for guards. They could telepathically communicate so she could silently warn him of any danger, but his legs were still shaking with fear that he'd be spotted. He gingerly reached toward the shield and withdrew some of his power ever so gently. It was working. Unlike most Mirthians, Stavius's body couldn't retain much energy, but he felt his talisman warmly glow as it accepted the charge. Stavius carefully watched the shield as he slowly absorbed more power from it. He was overly cautious, and it took two more nights before he noticed the barrier begin to develop a yellowish hue. He had found his limit, and he slightly reduced his energy drain. He brought Versera with him the following night and fully recharged her in less than an hour. The two guards whined about wanting a turn, but he silenced them with a promise to provide them with more magical energy than they'd ever had the following evening. Stavius and Versera had a reason for recharging her first. Versera was an expert magician. By morning, they no longer had to hide behind a pile of sticks and leaves all day. Versera now had enough magical energy to elude a 12-foot-tall screen in front of them, through which the guards patrolling the perimeter could see everything in the forest beyond, but not the four of them. Birds, falling leaves, rain, and trees swaying in the breeze all appeared, but the four spies remained unseen. Versera used a similar technique to elude a sort of tunnel to the shield. The soldiers weren't entirely convinced it would work, but were desperate enough for magical energy that they reluctantly followed Stavius through it. They were recharged within minutes and returned to their blind feeling more refreshed than they had ever felt before. Stavius then dragged and pulled a tendril of energy from the shield through the tunnel all the way to the well he was digging. He reached deep into the ground, completed the circuit, and waited. The effect was subtle, but it was there. The shield energy was connected to the flow out of the ground. Stavius gently forced the shield energy deeper and then drew it back. He repeated this pumping action for hours and could already see the results. There was a small pool of energy forming in the middle of their campground, and more importantly, he could feel the mass of energy deep within the planet swelling closer to the surface. Progress was slow, and their lives settled into a monotonous routine. Stavius would pump the magical energy for 10 minutes, rest for a half hour while the magic flowed, and repeat. Versera perfected her eluded screen and extended it for nearly 200 feet. It was now large enough to hide 100 troops. She also enchanted it so that it muted any sounds they made. The soldiers, whose names were Willie Bob and Buck Lee, gave up guarding their two prisoners and began searching for food. The group had rationed Terra's food packets for nearly a week, but were frightfully hungry and almost out of supplies when the soldiers came back from foraging with armfuls of vegetables and exciting news. Versera had given them enchanted stones which emitted light only they could see. This allowed the soldiers to secretly search for food under cover of darkness, yet still see what they were doing. One night, they hit the jackpot. Crops were often dropped when being transported from the farm. The rich, fertile, magic-free soil provided the perfect environment for them to take root and grow wild. No one bothered to harvest these plants since they were growing outside the barrier. This had been going on for years, and there was now enough food growing wild to feed a small village. The soldiers brought back armfuls of peppers, green beans, zucchinis, onions, carrots, and potatoes. Their supply would disappear as winter set in, but for now, they had enough for a feast. Versera was an incredible chef with magic, and the four of them ate one of the best meals any of them could remember. Willie Bob and Buck Lee had witnessed the heroes save their general and were now watching them perform feats which were unimaginable a week before. There were no doubts in their minds that these were the heroes of their prophecy and that their people would soon be freed. The soldiers were no longer guarding these two. They were following them. Stavius had an idea to prepare for the attack and instructed the soldiers to harass the sentries. They would sneak to random places around the perimeter and create huge ruckuses every 40 minutes or so throughout the night. They'd yell and scream for a minute or throw rocks against the shield, which created showers of exploding sparks. The two soldiers would then sleep peacefully throughout the day, but The slave farm patrols were always tired and on alert. The four of them enjoyed watching the slave farm guards get rousted out of bed to race to a potential shield breach several times a night. They knew it was a risky game, but they also saw the guards' response times slow after several nights of false alarms. The magic pool continued to grow, they were well fed, and they were now comfortably living in magically built huts warmed by magically enhanced stones. They were also getting bored and concerned about the whereabouts of General Jeremy and his troops. It had been nearly 2 weeks with no word. Versera assured the soldiers that she and Stavius would find out what was causing the delay if the troops did not arrive in the next day or two. The soldiers did not ask how these two people could possibly know what was happening many miles away, but they believed her. November 28th, Earth. The first thing I did when I woke up was to call Chantel.
"Where the heck are you?" I asked.
"In bed. You do realize that it's 6 o'clock on a Sunday morning, don't you?" she complained. I screamed into the phone,
"That's not what I meant, and you know it. Where are you and General Jeremy's troops?"
She calmly answered, "Oh, we're ready and waiting for your signal."
"What signal?"
I screamed in frustration. "The one you just gave. Now stop yelling and let me go back to sleep. We have 2 weeks before we return to Mirth." Then she hung up. "We're out freezing our butts off in the woods a stone's throw from a garrison of enemy troops, and she rolls over and goes back to sleep. I swear I'll kill her." I realized she was right, however, and decided to wait a few hours before contacting anyone else. I forgot to warn Veronica, though, and soon everybody's phones began pinging with panicked text messages. We eventually agreed to meet at Eastgate Mall for lunch. Chantel wanted to gather in Clifton since she lived on the other side of town, but was voted down. It was far too cold to be wandering around outside in late November, so Ms. Dotta agreed to give her a ride across town. Meeting at the mall was probably not the best idea, after all. This was the weekend after Thanksgiving, and the place was mobbed. We filled a couple of booths in the food court and swapped information while hordes of roving shoppers with full trays of food glared at us. Veronica and I explained what we had accomplished near the slave farm. Ms. Dotta, with numerous interruptions by Nancy, shared what had been going on back at the town. The king had sent soldiers to the neighboring villages asking for help, and over 60 troops had arrived. She had been hoping for more and was furious with her neighbors for not being more supportive, but there was little she could do. Now the volunteers refused to leave town until she gave her word that the gods assured victory. The king was frustrated with the delay and about having 60 more mouths to feed while she waited. She was ready to send General Jeremy out to check on us, but the round trip would take nearly a week, and Narayana explained that there might be a better way. The king was unsure whether to trust her, but Preacher, who is as slippery as they get, announced that if the supposed prophecy heroes had a direct line to the gods, they should be permitted to advise the king. Preacher and the king would be considered wise if their proposal worked, and the prisoners would be blamed if it did not. Veronica and I made doubly clear that the troops should leave immediately, and then said our goodbyes. I had Christmas shopping to do, which seemed more important than usual. After all, we were going to be heading into battle in a couple of weeks, and I wasn't sure if any of us would survive until the holidays. It made me want to spend time with my family, including my little sister. That concern was probably going to make me overspend a bit on my gifts this year. Chantel grabbed me as we stood to leave and asked, "Are we okay?" I said, "Yeah, sure, why?" She punched my arm and said, "Why? How about because the last thing you said to me after I poured my heart out to you was, 'Oh, crud.' What did you mean by that anyway?" I blushed and said, "I guess I meant it in a couple of ways. First, I meant, 'Oh, crud, I've been a complete idiot, and now I finally understand what you must be going through.' And second, I meant, 'Oh, crud, what are you going to do?'" She just stared at me and said, "You know, I really like you, but we have got to work on your communication skills. Do you think your mom will give me a ride home?" I said yes, so she told Ms. Dotta that she had a ride, and we left the food court. Then she asked, "But how about you? How do you feel about what I said?" I said, "I don't know. I suppose that while it's important, it doesn't change how I feel about you. You're like my best friend. You're only 11, and I wasn't planning on asking you out on a date. Besides, half the time we hang out, you have a guy's body anyway. It seems like what you call yourself should matter to me, but somehow it doesn't so much, as long as you're happy. Chantel put her arm through mine and said, "That is such a better response than, oh, crud."